Welcome to this limited series podcast called Teaching and Learning in a Pandemic. I'm Holly Clark with my co-host Ken Shelton, and we're looking at lessons learned and those lessons we can use to transform education in the future. So let's jump into the conversation. In this session, we begin our conversation with a quick and important pandemic vocabulary lesson with the pros and cons of each teaching configuration. I'm Holly Clark, author, speaker, blogger, and my co-host Ken Shelton is going to be joining me on this journey.
For the audience, if you don't know who I am, my name's Ken Shelton. I'm a Los Angeles-based educator, a consultant, advisor, educational technologist, and I would say with a high focus on equity. So in other words, what are we doing to ensure access and opportunity for all students?
Well, Ken, you're certainly an important voice to have in this conversation because you get to work with teachers all around the world.
Yeah, I do. I'm fortunate enough to do that. And the timing of this particular recording couldn't be better. It's a quick story. I was doing some work with a group of teachers. I was leading a workshop, and I noticed that they were using a number of the terms that are going around, you know, whether it's remote, virtual, hybrid, concurrent. And I don't want to say that they were using them wrong, but I think the way that they were using the terms were providing an incomplete contextual understanding of them. So that's why I'm glad that we're going to take a little bit of time in this particular episode to really provide a definition and terminology, if you will, framework for the listeners.
So how do you think they came up with those definitions?
Oh, good question. Sorry, I meant to mention that. Yeah, I asked them and they all said, oh, we just Googled it. And then, you know.
So they Googled.
Yeah, so they Googled. So, you know, I mean, look, the interesting thing about that is as much as we all like Google, you know, it's important to remember that Google does not have all the answers. Just because it can give you a response doesn't mean that response is an answer. And I think that there is an importance in us not accepting what Google, essentially the results are as, okay, well, this must be it. You know, take some time to, you know, authenticate the responses or the results that we get from multiple sites, multiple sources.
So the good news is that we're here to help out with that, with a ton of research behind it. But you mentioned Google and that people had Googled it. And I think this is a really interesting example. So as I started my own research, I went first and Googled hybrid learning. And this is what it said. It said, hybrid learning is an educational model where some students attend class in person while others join the class virtually from home. Educators teach remote and in-person students at the same time using the same tools like video conferencing hardware and software, yada, yada. That definition is incorrect. Right. That is the definition of another configuration called concurrent teaching, which has a teacher in class teaching some in-person kids while at the same time live streaming to kids who are learning both, and we'll talk about this more, both virtually right. and remotely. So the first definition in the little box that Google is known for was incorrect. So it's just a warning to you. Hybrid teaching actually is something quite different. Hybrid is taking your students, maybe there are 30 of them, and some want to come to school and some don't. That's very normal. But the kids who want to come to school, they come, half the class comes on Tuesday and Thursday, and maybe the other half comes on Monday and Wednesday. And then on Friday, you kind of set the stage, or maybe it's Monday, for the stuff that's going to happen to those two different groups who are coming to learn the same thing or maybe learn something, but coming at different times to make up for crowding in classrooms. That's hybrid teaching. And I have a lot of feelings about hybrid teaching, but I want to step back because I think that what's really kind of confusing, what I'm hearing wrong, is the idea of remote and virtual. Do you want to talk about that, Ken?
Those two are used interchangeably. I think it's important, you know, just to, again, understand the terminology. So in the most simplistic descriptors possible, remote learning is essentially learning that takes place of which the learner is not in the same physical space as the teacher.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing
right now.
That's
what most educators are doing right now. Okay, so that's remote. You are in a remote location.
And you're using something like Zoom or Google Meet or Microsoft Teams. You have some sort of tool that is allowing you to see those people. But let's talk
there,
about it.
There
let's
is.
Keep going.
I haven't seen a definition of it, but I actually would ask, and I'm wondering if you think that what you think about this, does remote learning have to be synchronous? And I don't think so.
Oh no, I don't. No, it doesn't, because I do asynchronous and synchronous with the eighth graders
right
now, and they go off and they go to a Pear Deck or a HyperDoc or something, and they're doing that asynchronously. But I can also watch them if I'm talented enough by giving them an assignment on Jamboard, and they're filling it out, and I'm watching them work. So there's remote learning happening, but we're not virtual.
So, true. Exactly. And before I go into that, I just literally was thinking of it because it reminds me, I go back, you know, age myself a little bit, back when you could take correspondence classes in distance learning.
Mm-hmm.
So now the whole idea of what we're doing now is both remote and virtual, because virtual learning is essentially any type of learning activity that is in a digital space.
Correct.
So right now, if you're teaching a class, you're synchronously, you're doing both remote and mm-hmm. virtual.
So remote in my situation stays constant, but the virtual changes depending on if I'm asynchronous. So that takes us to the next definition, actually, of blended learning, because when I'm having students at a station doing something on Flipgrid, I am employing something called blended learning. And right now, and this is the big one for me, and one of the reasons I wanted to have this vocabulary lesson, I have friends whose school district is calling this concurrent teaching, where they're teaching students in class and then live streaming to students in a remote location. They're calling that blended learning. And that really kind of hurts my heart a little, because blended learning can happen in the face-to-face classroom. And it's a really important concept that teachers understand for us to be able to do what's coming next. Is that we need to make sure we're tight and faithful to definitions, so that when this is over, when we say blended learning, some people, parents, the community, doesn't think that that is concurrent. It is an understanding that it is using tools in the classroom that are digital as well as maybe traditional methods. It's online, offline. And I do a ton of blended learning, and I have for 20 years. But it is not me live streaming to kids at their home.
But then you could also, like you shared, you could have blended learning literally going on in your classroom. If I'm actively working with one group of students, and then there's other students that are, you know, they're doing their own thing.
In a perfect world, you are, and you're personalizing, and you're using these tools to personalize, and you're using these digital tools to empower engagement and give students a voice and create these meaningful learning experiences for the individual learner, and that's blended learning. So I think we need to stay steadfast to these definitions as not to confuse community members. So now that we've talked about the remote and virtual learning, I want to talk about some of the pros and cons. And some of the pros that I've seen, because I've been teaching remotely with eighth graders, is I've seen kids who don't have to get up and go to school, and who are not tardy because of it, and who are not groggy because of it. And they seem to be taking ownership of their own learning. And they seem to be moving toward digital fluency instead of just digital literacy. And what I mean by that is they know which tools they need to use for what outcome. And they are well-versed in those tools. I have some other ones, but I'd like to know, what have you heard as a pro about remote teaching?
Well, you just touched on one. And I think it's important to recognize, like what you just shared, the whole idea around, you know, something even like time, you know, if students are able to sleep in, you know, and there's plenty of research to support, you know, especially a teenager, when school should start, and it shouldn't start before 8:30, that students are able to tap into more efficient cognitive function, especially given what everyone is navigating right now in regards to, you know, having to quote unquote work from home. So that's one of the positives. I would say, you know, another positive that I've recently heard is that students are able to be more self-directed. And I say students because I don't have a definitive percentage, but more self-directed to the point you just made around the teacher says, you know, this is the project or the task we're going to do, and this is the learning outcomes that we're looking for, and then allow for flexibility for students to create representations of their learning based on, like you just shared, whatever platform or mechanism that they find to be effective. And I will add, before we go into the cons, I think another part to that is that, which I know you're going to talk about it shortly, is that the teachers cannot, in many cases, just give students a multiple choice test because, wait for it, they're worried the students will Google the answers.
I'm glad you brought that up, because in our final episode, we're going to talk about what's next. And that's going to be one of the major things we talk about, is how do you go beyond this? I think my student's going to cheat because they're at home remotely. How do I stop that? And we're going to talk a lot about that. What I've seen with my eighth graders this year is that there's more individual instruction time, because I can send them out to breakout rooms and meet individually with students if needed during that time. They can jump into a Zoom call, which isn't something we would have done in face-to-face or even felt comfortable with. I think the parents would have been like, what are you doing meeting with my student in a video meeting before this? It allows stations and group work in these breakout rooms that I can watch happening, what the work that they're doing happening on a Jamboard or Flipgrid or Padlet. So that's really cool. And students often are showing a lot more agency around their work. I have students who now say to me, could I do that instead in Canva? Or instead of on a slide. And so now they're really getting that agency. And I had some of that before, but nothing like now. I just want to retouch on what you said. I'm seeing a lot of organized students, a lot of students who are self-starters now, but I'm teaching eighth grade. And seventh grade to 12th grade, we're seeing some of that. We're also seeing kids who aren't engaged. But guess what? I did too in face-to-face. In seventh to 12th grade, it's a different scenario than your K-6. So we have a podcast all about the elementary classroom that our listeners are going to want to listen to. So our cons, Ken, what kinds of cons do you see in this remote virtual?
Well, let's start off with the fact that the internet isn't a utility and not every student has access. So, you know, should add a couple of things. So there's that. And yes, I understand that a lot of school leaders, whether it's district leaders or site leaders, did what I commonly describe as educational triage back in the spring by handing out hotspots. But here's the thing. You've mentioned several tools, and especially some that are multimedia. Those are high bandwidth tools. So if you've got students that have a hotspot, yep. Or even worse, they have one hotspot in the household, they're not necessarily going to have either access to those tools, or the user experience on their end is not going to be the same as a classmate's that do. So that's one major con. In conjunction with that, I will add, many of the students are in now safer learning environments because they're in the home. So they don't have to worry about going to school and saying, okay, I have to endure the mental and potentially physical trauma of, you know, my classmates, the classroom environment, some of the teachers, the overall culture of the school. So that is a pro. You know, there is the whole idea around, like you and I have mentioned, you know, that some students are self-starters. There's a lot of students that are not. There's a lot of students that get 504 or IEP services that the schools cannot guarantee that they will have their accommodations met in the home. There is a significant amount of stress placed on teachers, because the common thinking is that, oh, well, you did it in the school. Well, you can just do it remotely. And you and I both know, which is important for everyone listening to hear, the two are not one and the same. They do not work the same. And so that's another con, because unfortunately, you've got teachers that are trying to manage lesson plans, connecting with their students. Well, what happens if you don't connect with all your students? How do you make sure that the students are quote unquote learning, which I know you and I will talk about later, is, well, what about the students that aren't connecting? They're gonna, what about their learning loss? And then I really think another con, to be honest with you, is that the social and emotional needs of both the students and the teachers cannot be effectively met, let alone supported, within the context of what we're currently doing.
So people are probably saying, okay, well, then what's the solution? And I think the solution is a lot more simple than people understand. And the solution is, with all of these cons, even with the pros, we have got to understand that during this time, less is more. We cannot expect students to be doing the same thing. I hear a lot that people are giving out. In fact, San Diego Unified, and we talk about this in our learning loss episode, is saying that they're giving out more Fs. How are you giving an F right during remote teaching? Is something wrong with you? That should be off plate. And an F based on what? 50% of work? Holy heck, that's a lot of work in a remote environment when you have kids whose parents might have a restaurant that's shutting down or might be a hairstylist who no longer has a job. So I hope that anyone listening to this understands that you cannot control this situation. This is a pandemic. And if you are going to say you're going to give a kid an F for 50% of work, please rethink about this. And if you are thinking that every kid has access to the internet, no, do you know that some of your students are driving up and parking in the McDonald's parking lot or a fire station? And if they do 50% of their work, that's a Herculean effort.
It is. You know what? And add to that, I just recently read an article where some students were going to the outside the buildings of their school and sitting outside because they don't have internet access at home to connect to the Wi-Fi at the right school.
So although there might be some cons and some pros, I really think if we really add empathy to this and we start thinking we have to grade kids the same way, and we understand that less is more, and we're going to talk about this in learning loss, how some school districts are putting people on pacing guides to make sure there's no learning loss. You'll get to hear what I think about that in the learning loss episode. I'm sure you can probably tell. I want to take a moment and say thank you to our sponsor, Book Creator. Book Creator is an incredible app to use in a blended learning classroom as it allows students to do more than create books, but interact with their learning. Check them out at app.bookcreator.com. It's definitely one of my favorite applications for teaching and learning in the classroom. So let's jump back now to hybrid learning, Ken. And hybrid learning is where students learn part of the time at a school building and another part of the time online or remotely. So maybe there's a lesson planned out or some ideas for the week, a learning target, and kids learn part of it face-to-face with their teacher, and the other part, they're at home doing asynchronous learning. This is a classroom configuration that I tend to be most fond of because kids get some social time with their teacher. And I mean social. I don't mean time to come in and take a test. That's not what you want in this situation. And like I said, we'll be talking about ways to do digital assessment so you don't come into school to take the test. And I like this because teacher is teaching a lesson synchronous and asynchronously throughout the week, but not having to live stream. And some people are doing both, but live stream at the same time. They're getting that individual time with those kids. And I just, if people could see me right now, I'm like hugging. And I know you're not supposed to hug kids or whatever, but I'm a teacher that I love my students. Kind of like this hug time where we can catch up. We can go over some concepts you didn't get and you continue the learning. And then on Friday or maybe Monday, we touch base on what the learning objective is going to be for the following portion. What do you think of hybrid learning?
So, I mean, I think hybrid learning is absolutely a fantastic model. You kind of talked about one component to hybrid learning. You know, I recognize right now if a school or a school district is doing hybrid learning, it's really out of safety for the teacher and the students. And while some people might think hybrid learning is difficult, I literally just had this thought while you were describing it. Hybrid learning, even right now, is very similar to a school that I worked at where we did block scheduling.
Yes.
So in other words, you did not see your students every single day. You saw them three times a week or two times a week. And it would talk, it would, you know, would kind of either toggle back and forth. In fact, that school, it was on Mondays, you had every class, and then you had half your classes Tuesday, Thursday, and the other half Wednesday, Friday. So, you know, I think with hybrid learning, and obviously I don't have the research to cite at the moment, but I would actually argue that if teachers are appropriately supported, provided with the resources, students are provided the resources and support, I actually think hybrid learning can probably be more a more efficient learning model, because it allow, just by the very nature of it, you know, balancing out synchronous and asynchronous, allows time for processing.
Yep.
And allows time for, you know, I don't want to say, you know, completion of tasks, but it allows time for students to, you know, again, I guess the best thing, it allows time for processing. It gives the teacher an opportunity to be responsive to those students that are of higher need. And it just, it's,
so that's something.
Yeah, remind was perfect. I agree.
Especially in remote learning, every teacher should be armed with Remind. So we have, the talented teacher can handle that. And if they're not there yet, that's where PD comes in. That's why we have the CARES Act. That's the kind of PD they need to have, not to buy a virtual learning platform where students sit and answer questions and progress through them to get to a skill-based education, because that is going to get them nowhere in the 2030s. So let's go to the next model, because we're running out of time, and that's the model of concurrent teaching, which says what Google incorrectly said about hybrid, but that's where a teacher is teaching kids. Maybe there's 10 of them in the class, and then live streaming to maybe 20 more or 10 more who are working from home, getting that information via Zoom or whatever. This model to me, as a teacher of 25 years and a digital pedagogist and a person who's been doing this longer than most people, got my first one-to-one classroom in the year 2000. I'm an OG of this situation. I've done it all. This is the worst idea that is out there if you're choosing the ideas. If you've already chosen it, then it is what it is, and your teachers will rise to the occasion because teachers are heroes. But if you're still making that decision, this is way, way too taxing on teachers. I have not met a teacher yet who's like, oh yeah, no, this is no problem. This is hard on them. And I don't know how students feel, to be honest with you, with it. I feel like they might feel left out.
I could see where by design, the students that are not in the same physical space as the teacher could very easily be left out. Like, in all honesty, I wouldn't use a concurrent model. I would do a variation of the hybrid model then. So for example, if you have students that physically come on campus, no problem. You have dedicated time for that, those students. If you have students whose parents have opted to not have their children come on campus, then you dedicate time to be concurrent or synchronous, if you will, rather, with those students. But I would not try to do both at the same time, because inevitably it's too taxing on the teacher. You know, the phrase that keeps coming to my mind is cognitive load, because a teacher has to be able to teach face-to-face, but then also remote, but then respond to questions face-to-face, but then still respond to questions remote. Who do you, if you get a student that wants to ask a question remotely, but didn't get a student who wants to ask a question in the classroom, whose do you answer first? How do you have dialogue? I mean, like there's so many problems with this. I think, you know, you and I are obviously in agreement with this. I think concurrent learning, I look at concurrent learning as another round square peg and a round hole.
Yeah.
We're worried about learning loss, so therefore we're going to force fit the students who aren't on campus to have to connect to the teacher video, and the teacher will lecture, because that's usually what they expect. The teacher will lecture, and you'll watch the lecture from home. This is the worst of all of the models, and there is a way to modify this to a more hybrid model that still meets the needs of the students and doesn't, you know, overtax the teacher. Because ultimately, this, in the end, if the teacher's not in the position to, you know, perform to the best of their abilities, then guess what? The students are losing out. So to me, the default would be, which of these models best supports the teachers that also makes the learning accessible for the students? And I think the hybrid model, if you are in a position where you can utilize the physical spaces, the hybrid model to me would still be the best fit. The concurrent thing, look, I would love to know if there is an example of someone who has effectively done concurrent. My guess is that it probably does exist.
Yeah, I have it on the elementary podcast. They do a good job of it, but it's not the best.
But hold on though. A good job according to whose standard?
To kids learning and engagement.
And how is that being measured?
That I can't answer for you, but I can stop and say this. Concurrent teaching came, the first I've seen the term comes from Catlin Tucker in her Blended Learning in Action kind of series. And what she meant by that is stations in a classroom, which is a beautiful and wonderful way to blend learning. And then somehow concurrent learning got switched into this thing that we're going to do with this live stream. And I know that everyone is doing the best that they can now. I know some incredible administrators, but if you have someone that you know, like, and I hate to say like myself or like you, who's been doing this digital game with students for 2 decades, you should reach out and ask them, what do you think about this? And not listen to the other people in maybe your listserv who also haven't taught digitally, who are making these decisions that might not be fully thought out or might be using a definition incorrectly. So just something to think about as you move forward. If you are doing concurrent, I'm sure that your teacher is rising to the occasion, but I hope that you're encouraging and giving encouragement every step of the way and getting them the resources they need. Because right now, those resources include maybe a second screen, maybe a Brio camera rather than the camera that's on the actual computer. I'll tell you what, if I were an administrator right now, I would find a way to find something that a teacher loves and just say, you know what? I appreciate you. And here's a $100 Starbucks gift card because my gosh, you've risen to the occasion.
Yeah, they'd have to be compliant with their district ethics policy on that. But your point is correct though. Your point is correct. It's basically, you know, it's what I say is one of the pillars of a strong and sustainable SEL program. It's being seen, being heard, and being loved. That's a way for an administrator to say, I see you, I hear you. And of course, demonstrations of love do not, you know, they can take on a myriad of ways, but that's just a way of doing that, you know, and sometimes we just want to be recognized for what we're doing. So
it's the digital Salbona. Salbona, for those of you who don't know, is a Zulu word that means I see you, I hear you, and I respect who you are. I respect what you're doing right now. I always find a way to bring in Salbona. I just want to say I saw a Facebook post by Wanda Terrell last night that said her school district gave everyone a $1,000 raise for this year. Something to consider.
Wow.
In our next session, we're going to talk about learning loss. And maybe it's not quite what you think it is. And so let's celebrate. Let's find the silver linings. And we'll see you in our next episode on learning loss. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Teaching and Learning in a Pandemic. This is a limited series that will disappear in early 2021, so make sure to listen to all the episodes before they're gone. Teaching and Learning in the Pandemic has definitely made us rethink what assessment should look like in the digital age. For more help, download your free assessment toolkit at infuse.link/podcast.